6.5% was it? Is that what the current odds are of the Stanley Cup?
Well, and if you look at the round by round progression, the Stanley Cup favorite is the Vancouver Canucks.
Like, what a time to be alive!
Talking you through every goalie controversy, scoring slump, and draft lottery bust, this is the C4 Podcast on CanucksHockeyBlog.com. Here they are, the best starting lineup we could afford under the salary cap. Chris, Matt, Anna, and Adam.
Welcome to another episode of the C4 Canucks Hockey Podcast, brought to you by the Full Press Coverage Network and CanucksHockeyBlog.com. I am Chris at Lightforce, joined virtually as always by Anna Forsyth at A4Sy03. Anna, fresh out of Hooverin, as opposed to Haverin.
Yep. I always wonder what you're going to go with for an opening, and apparently that's what's stuck in your head. I was just describing the chaos of coming home from a weekend away and having to clear out my Hoover. Not in the know, that is a vacuum, and get your heads out of the gutter.
Hey, I'm simply using the term that you used. But the story was as to what your weekend was about. I think Haverin is a distinct possibility, depending on how wild the weekend happened to be.
I don't even know what Haverin is.
Haverin?
Is that like an old-timey word?
It's Scottish.
Oh, well then I should know. My ancestors.
That's why I'm like surprised that you don't know what Haverin would be.
If, but
you know, Proclaimers, 500 miles. If I haver.
Oh yeah. True. I didn't put two and two together there. But yeah, I am just back from Bachelorette weekend. I don't think Chris has noticed yet, but I am wearing a Bachelorette t-shirt.
It looked like a white shirt to me.
It says,
Monisha's Bachelorette. Meet us at the bar.
And it has a legal shell.
Someone's a lawyer?
She's a lawyer. So
Okay.
I design these. I am great. Graphic design is my passion. I can post this on our Discord if anyone is interested.
C4 merch, just like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a reason I'm not in charge of that.
Yeah. You know, to link it back to how the Canucks have been over the last couple of weeks, they too have a passion for graphic design and in turn painting masterpieces. However, which way you look at it, they seem to get the job done despite the approach.
I like that. Yeah, that's a good way of putting it. Like, you know, Canucks are two for two.
Yes, in the regular season.
In the regular season. They've only beaten one team.
True. But that team is apparently the favorite to win the Stanley Cup this season. So, you know what that means.
Yeah. So, if you're better than the Stanley Cup champions elect, you're going to win the cup.
Yep. Yep. Many different parades have been discussed over the years. I think there is a list that's being narrowed down. I expect, if he hasn't done so already, Justin McElroy to give us a ranking of the preferred Stanley Cup parade routes. You know, he's ranked everything else. That should be on his list of rankings to take place.
That is very inside baseball reference to Vancouver Twitter. But yeah, if you're not following Justin McElroy, what are you doing?
Oh, gosh. I know, right? But no, the Vancouver Canucks have got a couple of games in the regular season under their belt. Because it's been a couple of weeks since we last talked to y'all, the Vancouver Canucks did stuff and then explained why they did stuff from our last episode that then made more or less sense, depending on your perspective. They decided that a one way to free up cap space is to do that for another team, which in turn ties into where the Canucks are right now. I can't make, you know, head nor tail of anything other than the fact you're right. The Vancouver Canucks are Stanley Cup champions elect because they beat the Stanley Cup champions elect. Let's talk a little bit about that in Rewind. If you are a person who throws a few dollars down on a team to, or a game to cover the spread, I was going to say a team to win, but no, a game to cover the spread, I sure hope you aimed for the Vancouver-Edmonton you know, home opener here in Vancouver to do just that. Vancouver found a way to score goals on demand. Like, it was crazy.
To use a local parlance, like, 8-1. I mean, keeping the fastest slash most skilled player in the league quiet to that, to the tune of 8-1, is surely to be applauded.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, what happened that game? Pretty much everyone who dressed up for Vancouver got points. I mean, that's actually not true. But a good number of them sure gave it their honest effort. You had a natural hat trick from Brock Besser. Apparently, he has found the flow. But
the flow has found more, the flow indeed.
More importantly, he took that a step further and got 4 goals and had plenty of game left to potentially get 5. At which point I'm like, oh my goodness, is he going to be the first Vancouver Canuck of all time ever? No Vancouver Canuck has ever scored 5 goals in 1 game. Will he be the first?
Spoiler alert. To break the score and win curse?
Well, which, okay, I said this because, Ian Cole, he must be employed by Big Save On or something like that, because he took a late penalty, which meant that Vancouver Canucks weren't going to get that additional goal off of Brock Besser's stick. But I shared this on social media and someone replied, and I guess I must have missed it. Apparently, because it was a national broadcast, like it was the Wednesday night hockey, that the Score and Win, sponsored by Save On, is a regional broadcast contest.
You say that, but then Danny Wagner, friend of the show, pointed out that there's nothing in the rules that say is only regional broadcast, and there was a winner listed on the website.
Okay. You know, and that's then that's fair. I'd go with what Wags is saying. It's just I presumed, hey, it's on Sportsnet.
But yeah, as you're right. Like the Canucks find a way to curse the Score and Win. So even if Brock Besser had managed it, they would weasel a way out of it. Daryl from Save On isn't paying out that money ever.
Well, and plus they have, Ian Cole, working for them. Big Save On, always sticking it to the man. That Petey is in a contract year. I don't know if you knew this.
I think I've heard that. yeah. Like, in case you're wondering, Petey's still Petey. I don't think people had any doubts necessarily, but yeah, like Petey definitely had that, like, show your ex what they're missing game, except that your ex is your ex. Current employer. Yeah. Was it Freeman was reporting during the week, or like maybe right before the game, that Pedersen, the kind of discord, I guess I would say, discord with a small d, between Pedersen's camp and the Canucks camp, that Pedersen's maybe not ready to commit to a long-term deal, and because he's not ready to commit to that, Canucks are kind of, they don't like that. It's just like, as Pedersen, back up the money truck, do what you have to do.
I think he said during the broadcast, like Friedman was like, if I was the Canucks, I'd pay him $11 billion.
Yeah.
Right? Very
honestly.
Factual number, $11 billion.
Francesco Aquilini definitely has $11 billion, so.
In 2 games, Petey's got 6 points. Again, very small sample size, and the fact that in one of those games, the Vancouver Canucks put up 8. They have scored right now 12 goals over 2 games. They could actually go on this road trip, score no more, and yet you would look at this like, oh, they've got decent production. I mean, yeah. If you average it out.
Sure. And, as we say, no one expected Pedersen to be, struggling. But yeah, he has hit the ground running for sure. And don't you think it's lovely that, not to, step on the toes of the next game, but, Hoglander, literally all the photos you're seeing from the Canucks social media is Petey and Hoglander just together and smiling, and it is just warms the heart. Like, the rehogging, as I termed it, like, I think is good for the morale of the team and for me.
Yeah. The other thing to take out of the two games is that the Vancouver Canucks approach has really been akin to what I've said they've had to do, score more goals than the other team, all offense, little defense. Yes, in the first game, they only gave up one goal, but the Oilers looked shell-shocked after Campbell let in a handful and didn't get any better when Skinner went in between the pipes. And then word comes out during the broadcast that the Canucks apparently are dealing with the flu.
Yeah. TMI all round with that.
Well, they say that, and then, I wonder why Thatcher Demko, got pulled and DeSmith got put into net. Then word came out why, and let's just say Luongo had it easy when he didn't.
That's the thing. We're not going to repeat it. If you want to look it up, look it up.
Yeah. But, the team is looking okay. Special teams, much improved in a very much small improved. Sample size. What we've seen in seasons past.
Yeah, like 100% small sample size, but it's the way it looks, right? It's not the stat sheet that we're going off here. It's the peeper, as we like to call it, is not static anymore. It's not, you have your role, you must stay in that role. And it's like, you have Quinn Hughes, like, on PP1. Like, please do not keep him in a set spot. You have Pedersen, you have, like, Bass is just, like, great as a screen. Just, like, yeah. It's kind of insane to me what they were doing before, so it looks a lot better. And the PK, like, which was, can we say dire last year? Yeah, it was dire. It was worse than league dire, so...
Well, you look at the PK in both games, but specifically the game in Edmonton, where the Oilers, they seem to be a little right-ticked after game one. I think, was it Connor had said that he didn't like how the Canucks were approaching things, trotting out their number one power play and how they swap goaltenders. Like, did he not catch the quote? Like, did that not pass its way through the hockey grapevine? Like...
I guess not. It was, like, right after the game, to be fair, so I'm sure their coats were pretty simultaneous, but, like, it was, like, I don't know. I was just like, this is the regular season. This is NHL hockey.
The code.
Like...
Anna, the code. They're gonna get theirs.
The only thing that it does encourage me is that it's not just, like, female athletes that get that BS, where it's, like, oh, don't run up the score line because you don't want to embarrass your team. Like, this is a professional sports. I think it's more disrespectful to stop, like, trying.
Yeah. I'd argue that Tocchet started rolling all four lines relatively equally as the score was going up, and we saw more of the third or fourth line than we probably would. The Oilers weren't stopping nothing. It's quite possible that had, Tocchet not really balanced the bench, that things may have continued to go. So I don't know what he's getting on myself either. Yeah. But why I sort of link it to the penalty kill in Edmonton is that you had the Vancouver Canucks blocking shots six ways to Saturday. Like, JT Miller was laying it out as if this was, the playoffs.
I know, which, and he was loudly giving an F as well.
Yeah.
Not and, literally, but...
I do wonder if what we're seeing is sustainable. Like, I get that it's early in the season. Maybe they're trying to set the tone, But if JT Miller is on the PK laying out to block shots like he did in that second game, dude's going to be banged up serious before we even get to the midway point. And that's not just him. I mean, they were laying out in front of everything. I don't know what the total shot attempts were from Edmonton, but like Edmonton outshot the Vancouver Canucks by twofold.
Yeah. Over. I mean, like you say, it's not sustainable if they're gonna like put in that effort every night where they are outshot 41-16. Like, that's not sustainable. But what you like to see between the games is that Edmonton clearly came out fighting. Like, we didn't like being embarrassed. Let's, like, stick it to you in our home debut. And Canucks found a way to, like, win at second best a lot of the night. Mm-hmm. So that's encouraging to see.
But yeah, I mean, they've obviously now put themselves into the favorite position. That's pole position to the Stanley Cup. I mean, that's just how this works. We've already discussed this. What this means as they continue on the road, having a clue. It, again, it's still so early. Like, this Vancouver Canucks team, if you were to ask me, as some, you know, people have, hey, Chris, do you think this is an improved team? As a whole, no. I think there's a lot of good parts. I think the team has improved in different areas. The problem remains the blue line, as we've discussed, is not the best. And you've got a lot riding on Thatcher Demko. But one of the things we did get to see a whole lot of was DeSmith and net, both game one, unexpectedly, and then game two. And I don't necessarily feel that I was as sort of confident in his play. Like, he did really well. He kept the puck out of the net.
Yeah.
But there were many times where he either seemed to be fighting the puck or fighting to see the puck, and the chaos that ensued in front of the net had me a little concerned.
Yes, I would 100% agree with that. Like, his playing style, if I'm being generous, is not the calm we see from Thatcher Demko. Like, even when he's dispensing bodily fluids whilst on the ice, he's like ice cold.
I thought we weren't going to talk about that.
Sorry. I'm the one that's so grossed out by it, so I don't know why I'm.
And are we certain that the ice was involved? Because the way it was described, it never made it there.
No, that's true. And I did find it funny, just to go off the rails briefly, that he posted a picture on Instagram of, like, him seeing with his newborn kid through the glass and warm-ups, and I was like, oh, so both, like, two Demkos out of three at the rink probably throughout that night, so.
Like, oh, father, like, man.
Kid. I don't know if it's boy or girl, so. Anyway. Casey DeSmith. Yeah. I would say, like, yes, I was impressed by his performance, but the way he plays scares me a bit. It's his, like, actual debut as a Canuck, like, not counting the 10 minutes of the first game he played or less than. Bound to be some nerves, whatever. Like, he'll maybe get used to the Canucks' defense or lack of.
Yeah.
But yeah, I wouldn't say, like, oh, yeah, I feel confident in our backup. Yeah,
and point out, 925 save percentage, only let in one even strength goal. The other two in game two came on special teams on the power play, and Edmonton has got a very, very good power play. I'd like to see a little bit more from him before I can sort of pass judgment as, okay, I'm feeling good now. The Vancouver Canucks don't have to, you know, ride Thatcher Demko until such time as he falls over.
Yeah, there's a ways to go before we feel that.
Balance to be had there. Looking ahead at the Canucks schedule, because they are on the road, they played that one home game and then proceed to not get another one until the end of the month. They are going to be taking on the Philadelphia Flyers on Tuesday, the Tampa Bay Lightning on Thursday, Florida Panthers on the Saturday, and then we'll be back to record another show to talk about those three games.
Once again, undefeated travel schedule for the Canucks. Just, like, always psychotic travel schedule.
Do you know if there's something going on in the Raj other than, like, Adam Sandler, who was in town this weekend.
Is he like still performing as a comedian?
Yeah, and apparently Rob Schneider came up on stage. I don't know. I didn't go. I just heard. But
okay. Anyhow. No, I'm not aware. Maybe they have some big church conference or something.
Oh, hey, did you see the VIP seats, the restaurant where it exists in the Raj now?
Yeah, like saw the videos. I was like, it is giving slave auction. Like, it's so weird to me. It's just like, to me, it's like Dance Monkey Dance. It's like, these are our like property that are parading and performing for us. And they go do their silly little job on their silly little skates.
Hey, gotta make a buck somehow. I think that we've seen other organizations have with like, you know, fans can go and like, you know, high five players as they go by sort of thing. I don't mind that, but the way it was designed is like, they've got like this nicest restaurant seating with a little rope separating you from the players having to go out and do our jobs.
Yeah.
Like that's the part that kind of feels weird. Like I'm going to sit here like it. When I looked at it, it was very, you know, Hunger Games-esque.
Totally.
I know the analogy in C4 Discord, slightly different, but,
yeah, I just thought whenever you see, you know, when you're watching Murph or whoever do like their hallway interviews in other rinks and you just think, oh God, thank like God, you have like the Raj doesn't look like that. And the Raj isn't special. We complain about it all the time. But, like, the way, like, some players have to go between the ice and the room in some rinks is just ludicrous. But, like, to me, that's what it was like. You just think, why? Just, like, also, yeah, we complain all the time about upgrades that need to be made to the Raj. And I get that you have to cater for a VIP audience, but I would just find it beyond bizarre to be in those seats.
Yeah, agreed. Other things that have happened in the last couple of weeks, the Vancouver Canucks acquired a player from Toronto, a team who was in cap trouble themselves. Now, when we last recorded, the Vancouver Canucks had gotten themselves to the point where like, hey, there's some room. They bought themselves some time. Things will have to change, but they're okay. So when you saw that the Vancouver Canucks decided that a fifth round, I think it was a fifth round draft pick, got sent to Toronto in exchange for Sam Lafferty, what were your thoughts?
So weirdly enough, I found out because a friend of mine who is a Leafs fan, or at least was a Leafs fan growing up and sort of is somewhat begrudgingly being swayed to being a Canucks fan just by being worn down living here. But he was like, you're getting a great fourth line player in Lafferty. And I was like, sure, I've always liked him. But who needs draft picks anyway? Like, it's a fifth rounder. Like, we're not giving away gold dust here, but I was just like, why though? Have I liked what I've seen from Sam Lafferty? Sure. He's tenacious. He does what a fourth line player should do, which is drive to net, get pucks on net, like, keep it simple. But yeah, it's not like I was like, oh, I see this. I see the reasoning. What about you?
So I understand that the decision was likely driven based on the health of the roster for opening night. They have some players who are currently hurt who aren't in a position where they can be put on long term, let alone injured reserve, because there's an implication as to how long they can play. Plus, I believe you could retroactively play someone there if you needed to. The problem is that the Vancouver Canucks are so hard against the cap that Lafferty, as being added, required that the Vancouver Canucks dress one less player than required on opening night. They simply could not afford to dress a full roster. Now, because of injury, they are using an emergency call-up to have Stadnica dress and his isn't actually costing on top of the cap. I don't exactly know how it
goal
works.
Goal scorer, Jack Stradnicka, yeah.
He is an emergency call-up, and he is able to play so long as the Canucks remain unhealthy. But as soon as the player is healthy, he is back into the firing team. But as players get healthy, like Lafferty is just a million-ish more of a problem that the Vancouver Canucks are going to have to sort out. Like it's the part that I don't quite get. And again, I'm not knocking sort of what he's done in the small sample that we have seen him in. The price isn't horrible for the role that he's going to play, but the Canucks have a lot of those types of players.
Yeah. Remind me, there's no salary retained, right?
No, as far as I know, it was because like Toronto was in a hard spot. Like Toronto was one of the few teams that they needed money. Like this is the thing is like, if you were to tell me that the fifth round draft pick would have been a third had they not been in cap trouble, like, and that's sort of what I feel I've seen people define that as great value. It's a good deal. Not keen on the, like giving away the draft pick, getting good value, only to have a problem tomorrow.
Yeah. Also, this is how I learned that his first name was Sam. I always assumed it was Kyle. I've looked that up just now. That's a Northern Irish footballer. Pretty obscure
Canucks
one who plays.
Didn't sign him.
Yeah, in like not even the top Scottish league. So I don't know how I know Kyle Lafferty, but. Apparently well enough to confuse him for Sam. Sam's Lafferty, as we said, he's fine to good. But, like, PDG is getting paid, like, $775, $1,000 to do a better job than him, like, up the lineup. Like, he's a useful tool, but yeah. Not useful enough to.
Did you just call him a tool? It's not very nice for a guy who scored a goal.
I know. That wasn't very nice.
Even if you call him useful.
Whilst we're on Sam Lafferty, the last remaining thing I want to say about him is, can we stop comparing him to the person that wore that number before?
I can't say I heard of any comparisons or anything of the sort. Not to suggest I've been paying that close attention. What number does he wear? Maybe I don't want to know now.
18.
Oh.
And I don't think Jack Stanica, who wore that number last year, got that many comparisons. Maybe the game's not the same, but like, I would just say every time someone in media or Twitter makes that as a flippant comment, like, you're traumatizing people. Mm-hmm. And yeah, let's just never mention him again. I'd be happy if I never saw that number on the ice, but
wow,
that's not code, really realistic.
The culture.
Yeah.
One final note before we get into Half Full Half Empty. Stan Smeal, who has been involved with the Vancouver Canucks since forever, right? You might recall, we talked about his role in regime change here in Vancouver. And at the time, how it was perceived that he would be part of this sort of core upper management leadership group moving forward. He was like, you know, Poho for 3 days or whatever it was. Well, after 45 years as a player, coach, senior manager, and leader within the Vancouver Canucks Hockey Operations Department, Stan Smeal has decided to transition from his day-to-day duties, but will remain involved with the club. So it sounds like he's more of an ambassador's type role, kind of like, you know, the Kirk McLeans and what have you. I heard, I don't know if you caught the interview with Bruce Boudreau, at least, but Bruce was asked, what do you think of, you know, Stan's transition? And Bruce's response is, you know, I do hope it was Stan's decision. Mm-hmm. He's a great guy, great leader, always good to talk to. And the way Bruce posited was how I felt. Was this Stan being either shown with the door? Because, you know, it doesn't sound like the Poho that's there was really keen on inheriting much of anything, which is what he did. Two, if that is the case, that really sucks. Whether or not Stan is good at what he did. But I really look at it as being simply a sign of continued problems within the organization. If, again, Stan wasn't leaving on his own accord. But he, after 45 years, maybe he does want to take a break.
Yeah, I mean, just on that note, like, I didn't hear that interview from Bruce. I can understand why he's saying that 100%, and I'm not saying this out of any respect for upper management, but I can, it's less that I, it's not that I don't think he would be forced out, it's more like I can see why he would want to leave. Like, he's 65.
I want to make that clear. That's sort of what I'm leaning, but I can see why there might be a perception otherwise. And if any of that perception holds truth, like, yeah, this is, you know, an ownership group that seem to be flying by the seat of their pants, getting bad advice, and in turn have continued to create situations.
Yeah. And I hope that's not true as well. Like, but Stan Smeal, just like to say, he's seven of the club is an overused term, especially in football, but like, what a guy. Like, the service he has provided to Vancouver Canucks as an organization is just invaluable, and like, what a legend of the team. I know people, I'm not going to get into the like retired numbers thing, but like, really what like he has given to the team is just everything. And like Cheech, I think his legacy like will live on, and like, yeah, Canucks fans really
do. I'm going to take that to heart. Open up that retired numbers can, okay, of worms. After everything Stan has done for the organization, I have no issue with his number being up there.
Yeah. I mean, neither do I. I get
timing.
Like, eh. Yeah. Yeah. And I get it. Like, we haven't won a cup and yet we've retired all these numbers. But I'm also like, I mean, I feel like we can talk about Luongo a different time, but I think you just need to be like, these people deserve it. And Canucks not winning a cup, like, that's a problem, but I almost think of it as a separate problem.
Mm-hmm. I mean, is a can of worms, but if you, the team wins a cup, does every number on that roster go up? No.
No.
Like, right? Like,
it's not connected, I don't think.
Like, no, it's not. So I don't, like, I'm not of the belief that you have to win a cup to get a number retired. I think it is a much broader conversation or equation, however you might look at it, which is why I sort of look at Stan saying, hey, I don't mind it, that he's up there. Like, that is
yeah,
perfectly fine in my mind. I have struggles with Pavel.
Yes.
And less I with Hank and Danny.
No.
None really with Trevor.
None with Hank or Danny. None with Trevor, I would say. I understand the Pavel thing because I understand the argument that he is so good that you want to put him up
Hall
there.
Hall of Famer, which means that opens the door to someone else.
Yeah, because I would say, like, you can talk about Luongo's, like, ties to Florida all you want, but, like, if we're talking about greatness in a position,
best goaltender.
It's hands down Luongo. So if Pavel's up there, Luongo should be up there.
No, Pavel opens Roberto up, as far as I'm seeing. I mean, again, yeah, entirely different podcast.
And we will revisit this.
Yeah. We're going to take ourselves a short break because I haven't a clue what just went on upstairs. You're listening to the C4 Canucks Hockey Podcast, brought to you by the Full Press Coverage Network and CanucksHockeyBlog.com.
Take hitting out of the game. You can't hit anymore, so don't do it.
The unsportsmanlike conduct, I want to get an explanation on that.
No kidding.
Because how do you get suspended for unsportsmanlike conduct?
Plus interference. There's no interference there. He had the puck.
Now, Madison never ever did that before. Now, why did he do it? And that because he was mad.
Well, your early favorite for the Calder Trophy, that's for sure. Elias Pettersson, you might even say your early favorite for the Hart Trophy.
Just to get back to your question, Elias is going to play plenty. He's going to play. He's going to get a lot of power play time. And, yeah, I'm concerned about our offense. We lost 200-point players, and we've got to find a way to score.
We kind of already touched on these two topics that we're going to get into in half full and half empty. First of all, Petey's contract. Friedman suggests the Vancouver Canucks need to pay him $11 billion. Two, things ain't so swell between the Petey camp and the Canucks camp. I don't imagine why.
Yeah, I mean, hockey players be hockey players, so it's still boring answers we're getting out of Petey and Connor Garland as well, just like focusing on the games. I'm happy right now, blah, blah, blah. But, like, I can understand why he's peeved.
Why not? Why would he be peeved? I mean, it's not like the Vancouver Canucks are a bad team.
Like, if you have given your best years to an organization that has repeatedly failed to capitalize on the elite talent of you and Quinn Hughes, like, I just think any, like, small or not so small uncertainty about a long-term contract is perfectly understandable. And just, yeah, $11 billion, sign on the dotted line, whatever.
Well, I don't know if he signs for $11 billion. Like, if the Vancouver Canucks backed up the dump truck and outpoured $11 billion and a long-term contract, I don't know if Petey is money motivated to sign that. I genuinely think he wants to win, which I love that in a player. I want that type of player on the team I cheer for.
Totally. And you're right. Like, what perturbs me is the pettiness of, oh, well, if you don't want to stay here long term, then we're not sure if we want you at all. Just like, okay,
it's like, the way it is. It's the code.
Like, it sucks that they haven't been able to prove to Pettersson in the time that he's been here that the Canucks are a long-term project worth investing time and time and career into. That sucks. But you did that, like, whether it was, you can blame the previous regime if you want, but, like, there's plenty of other issues. Like, JT Mills is the highest paid player on the team, and
he's not the best player.
No. that is just, like, you said it all.
Yeah. I have no issue if the team can't come to an agreement with Petey and ultimately find a way to get value out of something they would otherwise lose. Like, I feel as a player, I would accept that there is a business component. And if at the end of the day, you know, the team has to look out for the team in that regard, I agree that, like, the pettiness as to how the conversation seems to be unfolding is just nuts. But yet, if this were to come to light, like, if ultimately the Vancouver Canucks lose Petey, there has to be a rebuild. Like, there's no retool. There's no, like, oh, hey, we're just a couple of players away. You've lost your best player.
Yeah, 100%. That's the thing. And let's be perfectly clear. If they lose Pettersson and they manage to get value out of him, they have failed. It's not the worst option. The worst option is him walking away.
Yeah.
But they have still failed. The previous regime had failed him. The current regime has failed him. And failed the fans. The only way out of that is a rebuild. But that is still a failure. It's just not the absolute worst option.
I've seen a number of people in the social media sphere who fall on the side of if you don't want to be here, I don't want you here, Cam, which is interesting, to say the least. But if, let's say, Petey is exited stage left, who do the Vancouver Canucks get to fill that role for the prices to which the Vancouver Canucks are paying Petey at? Like, there's no getting better from there. Like, and I'm not, you know, I would actually, I would be equally concerned if this was a JT Miller issue, when I don't agree that JT Miller should be paid the amount of money he's getting paid by the team that's currently paying him. Right. Like, if this conversation had sort of been happening back then, I would have been about, like, there's got to be some value to be had there. You got to be smart. And that's how I approach this with Petey. But I don't necessarily see how the Canucks fix that. Like, they probably had an opportunity with JT Miller to sort of, quote unquote, fix that. But now that JT signed until, you know, 2300, there's no fixing a loss of Petey unless they've got a player down in Abbotsford who just hasn't turned it on quite yet.
And, you know, Abbotsford have had a great start. Ashdeep Bains is having himself a season already, and Tristan Nielsen has a hat trick. But Petey...
You heard it here first. Annis is Bains and Nielsen. Petey's 2.0 and 3.0.
Yeah, like... I mean, you say that, like, you would be having this conversation about JT Miller. We did have this conversation about JT Miller. Like, run the tapes. We had said this a thousand times over before he re-signed and since he re-signed. But, yeah. There is no way out. Like, the ways out are re-signing him to whatever deal you can make work. Finding some value. Starting a rebuild, and like, you have to put the faith that Quinn will stick through it because he's your captain. But like,
well, Quinn kind of has to at this point.
Yeah, but like,
well, actually, I guess he doesn't. There's no reason why the Canucks couldn't go move him elsewhere. But could you imagine lose Petey and then move Quinn? Like, if you're not saying the words, "We've blown everything up, come back in a couple of years," I don't know how the team recovers from that. But I you know. I don't want to make this all doom and gloom. Like, the Vancouver Canucks should be in a position to afford Petey and maybe some additional pieces to get better. Cap is allegedly going to be going up next year. They have some contracts disappearing, right? Like the Tyler Myers deal off the books. Now you might say, well, Chris, you got to replace Tyler. You sure do. But if they could find something a little bit better, more consistent, I wonder if they've got the money. It kind of looks like they do. So I feel that the Vancouver Canucks are in a good position, but I do not fault the player in Petey to say, hey, show me. Like, you know, we always talk about players being on show me deals. Really, the same could be said about the team.
Yeah.
Show me it's worth me sticking around.
Yeah. And they've already blown one chance at that, right?
Yeah, but if the team were to say, yeah, we're that good,
yeah,
it's one thing for you and I, the longest running, best mediocre Vancouver Canucks podcast, to say that. It's another thing for a guy who's been in the room and watched it the entire time, mm-hmm, to also think otherwise. You can't, you know, BS your way through that.
True.
Anyway, we'll take another quick break and then get into the F word.
He liked to say the F word.
Well, then get the f here then. Okay, see ya.
He's going to have the F word on it.
I wish I could give you an explanation about it. I can't.
You out of here.
You said the F word, Dad.
You called me the F word.
Gosh darn it, Anna. I wish they'd just keep the politics out of sport.
Yep. Wouldn't that be great? Like, but here we are in the year of our Lord 2023. We are two games into the season, regular season, and the NHL has already found a way to just F it all up.
Oh, like when they discussed how we're going to just not have like theme nights, or I don't know, I was going to call them nights. Like we thought that was nuts.
Yeah.
Right. Like we honestly did. That's not a way forward. That seems to be a way back.
Cowardly, but you see the journey they went on.
Yeah. Like they, you know, we don't know how to fix this, so we'll not have anything to fix. But then they issued directives to teams that were confusing to the teams. The teams are like, I don't quite understand what you're saying. Like, yeah, we're not allowed to do like nights and stuff like that. But you're talking about things that aren't about nights. You're talking about things, one of which most recently is a directive that players are no longer permitted to use pride tape or pride colored hockey tape on their sticks at any point. Bad news if they do. Which is like, so now if I believe something, I can't represent something. And yeah. I saw someone try to correlate this. Well, you'd get so upset if someone wore, you know, the thin blue line hockey tape. You know what? Yeah, probably would. But I wouldn't tell them they can't put that on their stick. You just got to expect the repercussions as to what you would receive should you make that choice.
Yeah, and it's just like we've gone from you can't force players into it, into like representing political beliefs they do not agree with, but which, by the way, LGBTQ plus rights are not political beliefs.
Thank you for making that very clear.
Clarifying what I'm saying. They've gone from that to you literally cannot have the beliefs that human rights are important. You can't showcase that belief. Yeah, I mean, there was that hockey directive of, like, they can't even be forced to be near minorities. And it's like, so, minorities meaning what? Like, people of color? Like, their teammates?
Well, it was, who knows who was writing it. Like, I would have to think the NHL has some pretty smart legal people who... I could not imagine writing something like this and saying, I think that passes the sniff test here.
Yeah.
That there aren't rights implications to the extent of human rights. And now not about politics in sport. Well, sport still has to follow, I don't know how to phrase it, political norms. Like, your constitutional rights don't stop the moment the NHL decides we're playing hockey here.
Yeah.
Like, that doesn't occur.
Yeah. Can we... To me, it's just infuriating from, like, obviously just a personal, like, ethical point of view, but just... It is like shooting yourself in the foot massively. Like, it does not seem to be in any way smart or necessary. What I will say is that you want to see some courage now that this incorrect thing has happened. Like, look at Qatar. They basically said you can wear these, you know, One Love armbands for the FIFA World Cup. And then they said, actually, you can't. And I'm like, okay. But what's going to happen if they do? Are they going to give yellow cards to the whole team? Are they going to send off the whole team?
Oh, and this is the thing. And I mean, thinking back at Qatar, I really wish a team, had done that. I understand that there is a significant risk to that team and those players, the way FIFA runs itself, and it's beyond the World Cup. But had a team done that, I genuinely believe FIFA evolves as a result. They may come down on the wrong side in that moment, but I genuinely feel they progress because of the response that the general fan base would come back with. I look at the, bring back to the NHL. Players already said, I'm going to put the tape on my stick. Stop me. And apparently, I think in the collective agreement or the subsequent addendum to the rules, actually says hockey players are allowed to use any color tape on their sticks.
That's nice. I didn't actually know about that addendum. But yeah, to me, I'm just like, when I hear the Canucks saying, oh, the rules are the rules. And it's just like, okay, but like, this is your, you know, this is your like industry association, essentially. You have an employer to protect you. You have a union to protect you, which is run a lot better than it previously was. So like, really, you saying the rules are the rules, I'm just following orders, sucks. Like, if that's your response, that sucks.
Yeah, I want to actually give credit though to a few of the players who publicly said, well, I'm going to do it.
Yeah.
You've also got like someone like Connor McDavid, who's like, we don't agree with this. And I mean, if there right now was a team that might, it seems like Edmonton might try to, you know, shake things up. But again, at this point, it's just words until you actually follow through. It doesn't matter as much. But on the Vancouver Canucks side, one of their senior leaders in the organization, the chief business officer, Colby Fackler, has been liking content on LinkedIn along the lines that this rule is no good. So I think there are some in the organization, maybe not on the hockey operations side, who do feel otherwise. But Vancouver has never been the type of team to rock the boat in that regard, unfortunately. It's not
really not.
Team.
But say there Brian Burke said that he would pay the fines of anyone that wore it and got fines. So and
I'm positive Brian would. And there's a rumor that a team bought a crap ton of pride tape. And the conversation starts, well, who is it? And I think the general populace believes the Seattle Kraken were that team. That's not to suggest they were. There may have been another team that did that, if that rumor is true. But on the idea of, you know, politics shouldn't be in sport, both the Vancouver Canucks and the Edmonton Oilers, the two games that I watched where they had home openers, had a land acknowledgement prior to the game, which I think is the right thing for these teams to be doing. There are many who would tell you that's political. As much as it's not, there are many that would tell you it is. And you've got teams acknowledging the events that are taking place in the Middle East right this moment.
Yeah, and taking a political stance, and I would say a hugely controversial political stance. It may be the stance that government is taking, but I would say it's a hugely controversial one. Like, we're not going to start getting into the Middle East conflict here, but
took a stance.
Yeah. Like, it is not a
but pride tape's the issue.
Yeah.
It's just, to me, far too telling of where the real problem lay.
Yeah.
And you know, if you're listening at this point and you're, you know, still like, why do they go on about this? Well, one, it's what we do. But two, think about this. If you are of the opinion that politics does not belong in sport, then for that to be true, there are many political things that still need to be withdrawn.
Yeah. No anthems.
Like if we're going to take an all or none approach, there is lots more to get to none.
Yeah. No theme, no military appreciation night. I mean, there's certain things that like may not be the Canucks decision, but like, even having the BPD as a presence in Canucks games is freaking weird to me, even though I guess maybe in the home opener it was necessary, but yeah, there's just so much that is just like sports inherently political. We don't live in a vacuum. There's so much that they're deciding to do. Yeah, but it's really clear to me just, like, what's important to them. But just, like, anytime they do stuff like this, like, there are, like, many players who are in the closet and thinking, yeah, this is exactly why I don't tell people. Like, and that goes from the NHL down. Like, there are people that will leave the sport because they cannot be who they are.
Well, again, like, further to this confusion, if a player were to come out, are they now allowed on the ice?
Yeah, like, because their teammates can't be forced to be near a minority.
Right? Like, this, I mean, I think, like, anyone would look at that and say, that's, Chris, that is stupid. You're right. But I'm not the one who's introduced the stupidity.
And you're not, and you're saying if a player were to come out, like, there is a national prospect who is currently, like, doing very well in junior, who is openly gay. Like, this is not just a far off idea. Like, Luke Prokop is probably going to be in the league in the next couple of years, and what kind of place is waiting for him?
Yeah,
and anyone like him sucks.
So asinine.
Sucks.
There's still time for the league to figure things out and get on the right side of history. But right now, wrong direction, Gary. Wrong direction. Speaking of direction, we're at the end of our show, unfortunately. We will be back, obviously, next week. We hope to be talking about just the Vancouver Canucks. We hope the NHL doesn't continue to go and be the NHL, because that's not us. Like, we don't go and dig up things. The league and hockey culture serves it up continuously on a platter to us. So my hope is that we will once have a show where there's nothing more to talk about in that regard. Until such time, we're continuing to record weekly. The Vancouver Canucks have 3 games on the road before we're back again next week. I, going into the road trip, would have been happy if the Vancouver Canucks won a couple of games. They're halfway there. So they get one more in the next 3 that met the mark that I had set. And if they get 2, that's a better than 500 road trip. So, hey, I don't think it's difficult for us to complain. Stanley Cup parade routes. Let us know your preference. Probably the best place to do so is in C4 Discord, discord.io/C4podcast. Although on the social media sphere of some sort, X, we're at the C4 podcast, and it seems so weird to call it that, but I guess that's what its name is, because the Twitter we once knew is long gone.
Okay. Well, I'm going to say Twitter until I am, you know, cold and dead in the ground.
Well, and I was, but then I actually listened to someone who had explained that by calling it that, when it's like, when it's clearly no longer the case, almost disrespects what the bird once was. But they had a compelling argument. I'm like, okay, I don't want to really, you know, try to correlate as if the same. But yeah, who knows what the social media situation will be by the end of the season and how many social media accounts I'll have to set up and how many accounts that I'll have to set up that are all varied, because don't understand who owns at the C4 podcast on Threads, but it's not us.
Okay.
And 2, trying to set up accounts for podcasts on all the different platforms can be difficult. Anyhow, our website is still broken, c4podcast.com. But if you want to help us out to fix all of that, one of the best ways you can do is to support the show financially. You can either do that on a one-off basis, or alternatively on a monthly or annually basis. You can go over to Buy Me a Coffee, or as Anna and I like to call it,
Buy Me a Pint.
And to get there, it's support.c4podcast.com. But Anna, any final words of wisdom for the listeners this week?
One normal day of NHL, all I ask, will never happen.
For me, I dusted off my lawn chair. I'm going to be setting up at Georgia and Granville, and I'm feeling that by playing the odds that way, it's pretty good, because most of the routes sort of go there at some point in time, except for one that apparently is going through South Granville across the bridge to the Raj. That would seem like a very interesting parade route. I mean, you could start the you know, floats at the top of the hill, give them a nudge, and maybe it's more, you know, ecologically sensitive because you just coast all the way down and maintain that speed as you fly off the...
I mean, I like that argument, but I don't think any of the players that are under 25 know what exists outside of downtown, so don't confuse them.
Hmm. Okay, okay. Well, I'm not trying to. I'm just saying one of the advertised routes.
I'll join you at Granville in Georgia.
Yeah.
I'll bring a blanket.
Awesome. Well, I'll bring two chairs. And we could cuddle under the one blanket you bring. Oh, unless you bring two.
Cut.
Well, fine. I guess the show's over. I'm Lightforce. She's A4Size03. We out.